Good morning and welcome to the Snow Nose Gardening Show. I'm Norm Carlson here this morning on this beautiful Saturday morning. If you haven't had a chance to get outside yet this morning, it feels great. It's a little, it's still a little morning nip in the air, but you know how as the season starts to progress towards spring and weather starts to get just a little bit warmer, especially in the mornings and everything, you go outside and there's a certain smell in the air. Just kind of a fresh, musty, earthy smell that just, you only smell it in the early spring. And there's a hit of that in the air this morning. And it's just, it gets you excited for the warmer weather to come and for the opportunity to get out and start doing some things out in the garden and be thinking about all the things that, all the work we got to do this spring to recover from winter. But spring is always such a great time of year, and this transition from winter into spring is always so much fun because your energy level is up. You're excited to get back outside and do some things out in the garden. Things have been kind of getting on your nerves all winter long when it's been too cold to get out there and do anything about it, or it's just the wrong time of year or whatever, but it's getting to be warmer. We've got a great long-range forecast. Tomorrow's supposed to be up 60, and by the end of this coming week, we could be pushing 70 degrees. As of right now, they're only saying, they're only forecasting low to mid 60s, but some of the computer models and everything are showing that it could easily be close to 70 by this time next week. So I don't know that that's going to be the permanent beginning to spring. I think we still got some cold weather ahead of us, but by midweek, we're looking at lows above freezing for the rest of the week. So that's always just wonderful. And you get out there and you don't have to scrape ice and snow and everything off your windshield first thing in the morning. It's just, it's wonderful. But our number is 977-1070. If you have a question that you'd like to ask, give us a call this morning. We'll give you the greatest, most up-to-date information we possibly can about anything that's happening out in your garden, anything that you're contemplating for spring, planning on, anything that you've got to work on for this coming season, anything that are any problems that you've run into over the winter. We'd be glad to help you out with any of the best information available in Central Virginia, local information that's tried and tested for this particular area. We've got a caller on the line, so let's go straight to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Snow Nose Gardening Show.
Good morning. Thanks for being on the show. I always learn so much.
Oh, glad to do it. It's a lot of fun. We appreciate everybody that listens, especially you for calling in. It just makes the show so much better when we can interact with you and help get you what you need out of it.
Well, I hope I'm not alone with this question, but I have neglected my lawn, not for 1 year, but a few. And now I know it needs lime, and I'm wondering is that what I should start with? I did have my the soil tested a couple of years ago, and they said put lime on, which I have not done yet.
Okay, yeah. If the ideal thing would be to get an up to date soil test, but where you had one done a couple of years ago and things really haven't changed, that's going to be a real great baseline to go with. And chances are, whatever the conditions were then, it hasn't changed a tremendous amount if you haven't been doing a lot with it. Do you by chance remember what the pH rating was back then, or how much lime they were recommending?
I should have just pulled it out. I know I have it in my files buried somewhere, but I know it needed 100 pounds per, I have a lawn that is 70 by 100 feet, and it needed 200 pounds of lime.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that gives me a pretty good idea. So it was 70 by 30?
100.
Or 70 by 100. Okay. So, about 7,000 square feet needing 200 pounds of lime. Yeah, the pH was relatively low, not a kind of in line where a lot of lawns are in this area that haven't been, you know, haven't had a lot of lime put on them anytime recently.
Knowing that, it has deterred me from doing what I should have, the pre-emergent and the fertilizer and all that. You know, I say to myself, it's not very effective if you don't do the lime first. So lime takes a while to react and to get into the soil properly?
Yes and no. The traditional lime that we've been, you know, that we've been using for years, the kind of, let me step back a little bit, kind of take you through a progression of the different stuff that's available. The powdered lime that we've been using for, you know, that I remember as a kid, you know, you walk around behind the spreader and it looks like the white, you know, this white cloud, you look like Pigpen from Peanuts cartoon strip. You get this cloud around you as you walk around the yard. That takes about 10 months before it is able to really have an effect on the pH of your soil. It takes a long time to break down. Then they came out with the pelleted lime, which is the one that's predominantly available now. You don't even see the powdered lime very much anymore. The pelleted lime, actually, they're in the process of manufacturing it, they're able to grind it and pulverize it even finer than the old pelleted lime, or the old powdered lime, I mean, and then bind it in those pellets so that it's, you know, a bigger granule, a bigger prill that spreads out much easier, and you don't have that big cloud and everything. But it also, as once those little pellets hit the ground and water interacts with them, they fall apart very readily, and because they're ground up so much finer, they actually are reactive in the soil in about 3 months.
Okay.
Now, the newer things that have come out are things like MagiCal, which is a more highly refined product that, believe it or not, is active almost immediately. And instead of 200 pounds, you'll need probably, instead of five bags, I guess, for 200 pounds, 40 pounds a piece. Do the math. It's early. Sorry.
You're right.
instead of five bags of the lime, with the MagiCal, you need half a bag.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's available almost immediately.
Oh.
So that's how I would do is go ahead and get a bag of the MagiCal. I take that back. You know, there's two different sizes of MagiCal. There's a 20 pounder and a 40 pound. So one 20 pound bag would do everything that you need to do.
Wow, that's incredible. One 20 pound bag.
Right.
Great. And you sell it?
Yes. Yeah, we've got it in stock now. And one of the great things about lime is you can do that anytime. As it doesn't matter, you know, soil temperatures, all that kind of thing, and season that are important for a lot of other things like the pre-emergence and your fertilizers and things like that. Lime doesn't matter. You can put that on anytime.
Good. Thank you so much for that. And let me just quickly, because I don't want to take up all your time.
Sure.
So I put on the lime, and then I should do, I've got crabgrass, I've got weeds, and I need to seed. So what should I do first?
How badly do you need to seed?
There are patches, plenty of patches, but of course the patches get taken up with the wire grass pretty soon, or you know, in the summer.
Okay. Yeah, if you feel like you can get by with it, I would wait and seed in the fall.
Okay.
And get your crabgrass under control, get your broadleaf weeds under control this spring. And kind of nurse it through the summer, and then you know the best time out of the whole year to put down seed is going to be in early September.
Okay.
So if you can get it to early September, if you can live with it until then, get the weeds under control now, and you'll have a much better seed bed for the seed to get started. Plus, you're not competing with the weeds as you're trying to get the seed up and going.
Yes.
And the pre-emergent that you use for the crabgrass, if you don't have to worry about new seed going down at the same time, the pre-emergent that you use is a lot cheaper.
Okay.
And works better, and it's just much, much more effective, cost-effective, and crabgrass effective.
Uh-huh.
If you can just go ahead and use the dimension, the conventional pre-emergence, get that under control, get your broadleaf weeds under control without having to worry about working it around windows of seeding and all of that kind of thing, and deal with the lawn establishment come fall.
So March, maybe, pre-emergent?
Yeah, time it about when the forsythias start blooming.
Okay.
So when you start to see some good strong color coming on the forsythias, then go ahead and get the crabgrass pre-emergent down, and then you can start in with the broadleaf weed control also. And be honest with you, with the weather forecast that we've got coming up, you could almost start with an application of broadleaf weed killer now.
Okay, so those are two different things, pre-emergent and the weeds that already exist.
Yes.
So those are two different applications.
Two completely different applications,
okay.
Two different products that work two different ways. So.
Okay. And great, this is fantastic. How about fertilizing the grass? I've got pre-emergent, I've got broadleaf. Should I try to be fertilizing too?
Fertilizing in the spring is always kind of... grass is going to be growing relatively aggressively anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you're trying to kill off these weeds,
right.
And you know you don't want to overstimulate them. Although, to a certain extent, the faster they're growing, the better they're metabolizing the product,
uh-huh.
And better, you know, more effective it is. So, where you haven't done anything in a long time,
right.
You might want to come in with a light feeding.
Okay.
And you know, time that may be end of March, 1st of April, so you get past that real initial flush of growth that comes on so that you're not just overstimulating the lawn, but
okay.
Get it on early enough that it's not extending into June and July where you can get some fungus problems from it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, you're certainly welcome.
All right. Thank you
for calling.
Keep up the good work.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. A great call. If you'd like to join in, our number is 977-1070. If you have a question that you would like to ask this morning. And, you know, there are, and you know, you made the comment that you hope you're not alone in this question. And one of the things that I want to reassure you is that you're not at all alone. And I think that's one of the things that the industry has seen over the last two or three years when, you know, times have been kind of tight and the economy's been a little rough. One of the things that did get neglected in a lot of cases was the lawn. You know, it's one of those judgment calls that you have to make. Okay, what do I want to, you know, if money is tight, what do I want to invest in? And it's easy to kind of put the lawn and the garden kind of on the back burner a little bit. And as a result, we are seeing a lot of issues that have cropped up that can be kind of attributed to conscious, I don't want to use the word neglect, but, you know, consciously allowing the lawn to kind of fend for itself for a little while. And, you know, there comes a point when you have to reinvest in the lawn, in your garden, make sure that, you know, some of those things that you've kind of been putting off for budgetary reasons or whatever, those issues, you know, at some point need to be addressed, and you need to invest a little bit in those things before it gets too far down the road and things get to the point where, you know, you really almost need to start over again. If you let it go too long, it gets to a point where it becomes very difficult to recover without, you know, kind of redoing the whole thing from scratch. So, if you're one of those people that you know, have fallen into that category of not wanting to put a lot of input into your garden, into your lawn over the last couple of years, you know, maybe money's been a little bit tight, it's time to really think about making some of those investments again, because if you let it get too long, it gets to a point where you can't recover from it, and then it becomes really expensive. So, you know, don't be penny wise, pound foolish. Go ahead and put the money into where it needs to be to keep things at least minimally maintained and preserve the investments that you've already made. Again, our number is 977-1070 if you have a question that you would like to ask. Of course, coming up on Monday is Valentine's Day. And talk a little bit about Valentine's Day and all of the things that are available for your sweetheart, especially us guys. It's you know what happens if you don't bring something home on Valentine's Day. You don't want to be in the doghouse. So we've got lots of things that are available for you out at the Garden Center. We're stocked up. One of the things that we're not doing this year that we have done a little bit in the past, we will not have cut roses this year. We made the decision not to do that. They're available in lots of different places. They're not very long-lived. It's very difficult to get a long, extended bloom out of them. They last for such a short amount of time. There's so many other things that are available that you can get so much more bang for your buck out of. They're less expensive, last so much longer, that those are the things that we really decided to concentrate on this year. Let somebody else deal with the roses and the hassle of handling them, and we'll get you something that's going to last and give you a good return on your investment, for a good long period of time, and give your sweetheart something that she can enjoy for weeks instead of days. We've got a great selection of potted plants that have been grown on in the greenhouse. We've got cinerarias, we've got pocketbook plants, we've got forced tulips and daffodils, we've got little miniature roses that are in bloom and absolutely beautiful, beautiful little roses that you can have on a pot on the windowsill till things really warm up in late April, early May. Then you can plant out in the garden and keep going for years. We have cyclamen, we've got begonias, we've got Martha Washington geraniums, we've got orchids, Phalaenopsis orchids that are in bloom and will bloom from now through Mother's Day. We've even got some that are just budded that'll be kind of a surprise when they come into flower as to what color they are, and especially those will last forever. You'll still have flowers on those in May, and they're just phenomenal plants, very, very easy to care for. You can have them in virtually any environment as long as you've got some light. If you've got a window in your office, they'd even work great as a desk plant on your office at work. They're super easy to care for. Water them. This is about the only one of the only plants that I will tell you how often to water and put it on a watering schedule. Orchids, take them into the bathroom or into the kitchen sink once a week. Let the water run freely through the pot until it's running out the bottom. Then stick it back on wherever you keep it after it's drained really well, and just let it go for another week. And they're that easy to care for. Fertilize them once in a while when they finish blooming, and as long as they've got good moderate to bright light, they'll reward you with flowers again next year. So orchids are a great way to go. Good long term, you can have literally years of bloom out of them with just a little bit of care. We also have gift certificates available. You can come in and get a gift certificate for, plants, shrubs, trees, whatever that you want to plant out later in the season. Or, if you have some, let's face it, some of us just enjoy getting tools and things like that we can use in the garden as well. And, of course, we also have some bonsais that you can make great gifts. Don't take up a whole lot of space, but something that you can play with and dabble with for years. So come on out and see us for Valentine's Day. We'll be open till 4 o'clock this afternoon, and of course 8 to 5 on Monday. And we'd be glad to help get you set up with the perfect gift for this Valentine's Day. We've got to take a break for news here at the bottom of the hour. Rob will be with us with all the latest happenings here in Charlottesville, and we will be back right after that with more of the Snow Nose Gardening Show here on News Radio 1070 WINA. And welcome back to the Snow Nose Garden Show. I'm Norm Carlson on this, the longest continuously running gardening show in the world. And, we're not just making that up. We've done the research, and it's true. Nobody's been doing it longer than we have. Since the spring of 1950, we've been on the air bringing you the latest and the best gardening information specific to Central Virginia, the Charlottesville, Flavanna, Greene, Nelson County area. Well, we'll even take in our friends down in Buckingham and Orange and even over into the valley a little bit. But anyway, you know, we've been doing this in this area for a long time. So this has been around since 1912. And over the years, between the bunch of us, we've accumulated a lot of experience, a lot of been there, done that, a lot of, yeah, that doesn't work. A lot of, yeah, that doesn't work. But a lot of things that, yeah, that does work. And that's, you know, we've got some of this stuff figured out. So our goal is to help you get it figured out so that if you've got some challenges with your lawn, with your garden, thinking about vegetable gardens, flower gardens, perennials, trees, shrubs, houseplants, any of that kind of stuff, give us a call with challenges that you're facing and we'll help you, like I said, we'll help you get it figured out and get on a program that'll get you the results that you're looking for. Our number is 977-1070 if you have a question that you would like to ask. This weekend going on today and tomorrow down at the Richmond Center in downtown Richmond is the Maymont Flower and Garden Show. And I haven't had a chance to get down there. I've just been had a few too many things on my plate. But Scott Price was down there earlier in the week and was telling some of the things that are down there at the show. And as always, it's a great opportunity to go down there and enjoy some beautiful landscape displays, things that, you know, full size landscapes that have been created inside the Richmond Center with lots of things that are in bloom, leafed out already. You get to experience a little hint of what's to come for spring and get your motivation going and get yourself juiced up and ready for the spring season. So unfortunately, the advance ticket sales are over. We're not allowed to sell them anymore. But you can still pick up tickets at the door down at the Richmond Center. So if you've got the opportunity, hop on in the car. It's just a quick hour's drive down to Richmond, and you can be transported into spring for a couple of hours as you walk around and enjoy the great exhibits and all of the hard work of all of the exhibitors down there. And, you know, as always, they've got a vendor area with lots of unusual boutique-y type items that are, you know, kind of garden related and home related, a lot of home things as well at the show. So take advantage of that. If you've got some time this weekend, hop in the car and run down to Richmond. Enjoy the Maymont Flower and Garden Show that's at the Richmond Center in downtown Richmond. Easy to find, right off of Broad Street, right in the heart of downtown. So take advantage of that if you have the opportunity. One of the things that is going to be, you know, as the garden starts in its waking up process, as we get a little bit deeper into, you know, the last weeks of winter and the first weeks of spring, there, you know, you start to think about of all of the things that were there in the garden last year that maybe weren't quite in the right place, or maybe you're starting to some of the perennials that have multiplied and are spreading. The clump is getting a little bit bigger than you would like it to be. And start to think about all of the things that you'd maybe like to have in a different place or thin out or you know, you need to divide and give them a little bit more space, move a few of them out, or things that you'd like to share with a friend. Which is always a great thing, particularly with perennials, as that clump starts to get big. You can share it with some of your friends, and it's always a great thing to be able to swap plants back and forth. But it's getting to the point now where we can start really looking at doing some of that transplanting and dividing of some of the perennials, like your hostas and your daylilies and things like that. And your ornamental grasses, if you've got some of those, Corbin and I were looking at a couple at the garden center yesterday that the clumps have really, really gotten big and almost too big for where they are now. And one of them we're going to be moving to a different spot, and another one we're going to be probably digging up and dividing and making some babies from it and reducing the size of the clump. so that it's not quite so big in the spot that it is. Not taking, it's getting ready to swallow up one of the walkways, so we need to reduce its size a little bit. But this is coming up on really the best time of year to do that, particularly with your daylilies and hostas and the grasses as they first start to poke their little heads up out of the ground. And that's going to be happening real, real soon, especially with the weather that we've had these past couple of days and with the forecast for the next upcoming week. The soil temperatures are really going to start warming up, and they're going to really – you're going to start to see those first green shoots kind of emerging up out of the soil. Typically what they'll do is kind of poke their heads up and then kind of sit there for a little bit. Not do a whole lot of growing, but you'll be able to see those new shoots above the surface of the soil. And that's an indication that it's time to go ahead and dig them up, transplant them, divide them, space them out, move them around, whatever you need to, and get them back in the ground before the growth really kicks off here in another few weeks. So with your daylilies and hostas are the two that we primarily think of, but this goes for a lot of other perennials too. As they start to put their heads up, you can identify where the clump is, and then the easiest way to transplant and divide them is just to very carefully go in and dig up the whole entire clump, go down with the spade, and make a cut into the, just stick it down in the soil as deep as you can get it, drive it in there with your foot as deep as you can, and then pull it straight back out, and then move over a little bit and stick it down in and pull it straight back out again so that you cut all the way around the clump without, the temptation is to stick the shovel down in the ground and then pry up on it and push up on the root ball of the plant as you're going around. Resist that temptation. Just stick the shovel straight in the ground and pull it straight back out until you've made a complete circle all the way around the clump. And then you can start looking at actually, undercutting it and popping it up out of the ground. A lot of times, particularly with the perennials, once you've made that circle all the way around it, then you can go ahead and stick the shovel back down into the ground, then pry up on it, or kind of come in at an angle down underneath it, and it'll pop up fairly easily. The ornamental grasses sometimes that's easier said than done, but with daylilies and hostas and things like that, they come up fairly easy. Just pop them up out of the ground. Once you get them up on the surface, then you can look at it and see, maybe if you just want to move it to a new spot, just pick the whole thing up, dig a nice hole for it, stick it back in the ground, level with how it was in its original spot, backfill around it real well, water it in, maybe with a little root master to get it off to a good start, and you'll be in good shape. If you want to divide it and, split up the clump and maybe move it around to several different places, or, like I say, give some away and then put some back in the original spot, but just not quite so many of them. The easiest tool to use to divide daylilies and hostas and other perennials like that is to take a spading fork. And it's a little bit different from a pitchfork. It typically has a short handle and only has about four tines on it, and they're flat. They're not the the round wire tines like you'd see on a pitchfork. They're flattened and maybe 3/4 of an inch wide. But take that spading fork, just drive it down through the middle of the clump, and then kind of twist it back and forth in there, and that will help to pry some of those plants apart and divide up those individual root systems that have developed within that clump, so that you're able to preserve as much of that root mass as possible. If you've got them, it works even better if you can take two spading forks, put them in back to back, drive it down through the middle, and then pull those forks apart. And then as you do that, you'll see the roots come apart, and you'll see how many of those roots you're able to save instead of just coming down with a spade and cutting it in half. You can obviously do that, you're going to do a little bit more root damage by just using a conventional spade to do it. But you can, you know, if you don't have a fork, you can go in and do it that way and still be okay. But the ideal way is to do it with that spading fork and pry them apart so that you are preserving as much of that root system as you can. And you can break those clumps up into as many pieces as you want, as long as you've still got individual units that of plant that are left that have a good root system on them and several growing points. That's the little buds that have come up and started to break the surface. Once you've got them divided up, you want to get them back in the ground as quickly as you can. If it's going to be a little bit before you can get them in, you can put them over in a corner somewhere, heal them in into some mulch or some loose topsoil, even some composted or composted manure would work well. Just something to cover those roots up so that they're not going to dry out, and put them someplace where they're going to be protected a little bit from the wind and the cold, and you can preserve them for a few days that way. But again, you want to get them back into the ground as quickly as you can. Dig a good wide hole, loosen the soil up, you know, maybe incorporate some bumper crop back into the soil, and put the plants back in. Loosen, you know, open those roots up as best you can, and fill gently around them so that you're not just cramming all the roots together in a little wad down at the bottom of the hole. You want to spread them out as much as you possibly can, and then fill loosely around them so that they've got soil, you know, in and amongst the roots, and they're fanned out as best they possibly can, so that when they start growing again, they'll be going out into different directions and covering as much of the soil area as you can. They're going to be much happier for you haven't done that. But then, you know, fill in around and pack the soil in. Make sure that you don't get them any deeper than they were where they were growing originally. And water them in real well, preferably with a solution of Rootmaster that's a great transplant solution for anything that you put in the garden, whether it's things that you've dug up and moved or, you know, divided, or new plants that you're bringing home from the nursery. Rootmaster is a great product to mix in with the water that you use to water the plants in with. It's got actual rooting hormones in it, as well as some vitamin B1, which is a great stress reducer for the plant, and some other compounds in the mix that help the plant to overcome the stress of being moved, and also to encourage and stimulate new root production down under the soil, so that it's going to acclimate and get its root system growing and moving along as quickly as you possibly can. And that, anytime you move a plant or introduce a new plant to the garden, that always is the key, is to get a good, strong root system going and get that going as quick as you can. So Rootmaster really is a good product to use to help get that process off to a good, healthy, quick start. We've got to take a quick break, but we will be back in a moment with more of the Snow Nose Gardening Show.
Looking for a more sustainable way to stay in style? Check out Jabba's Twice as Nice store and find great deals on men's and women's apparel, treasures for the home, jewelry, accessories, and more. Located in Preston Plaza on Preston Avenue, Twice as Nice is a nonprofit upscale resale boutique benefiting the residents at Jabba's Mountainside Senior Living Community in Crozet. Come in to shop or donate your gently used favorites anytime between 10 and 5:30, Monday through Saturday. Visit twiceasnicestore.org for more information and special coupons.
There's nothing better than walking out of a Suntan City salon with the glow of a perfect tan. Unless it's walking out of a Suntan City salon with the glow of an absolutely free tan. It's Free Tan Week at Suntan City, the incredible deal where you can experience a free tan in our fast tanning beds. But it's only available February 7th through the 13th. And it's an even better deal if you're already a Club Sun member, because you'll receive free upgrades to the next level of tanning. And everyone who comes to Suntan City during Free Tan Week will receive 20% off the purchase of any retail product. A perfect tan that's absolutely free? It's almost too good to be true. But it's only available February 7th through the 13th. Suntan City, let yourself shine. See salon for more details. Be bright. Please tan responsibly.
Suntan City is located at the Ryle Hill Center, close to TJ Maxx, and on Pad Tops, close to Giant. Free Tan Week is happening now at Suntan City. Let yourself shine.
You You've got home improvement questions?
You've got to be careful because you should not put a vinyl, PVC, any kind of a membrane, even paper, directly over a newly grouted floor.
He's got the answers.
So you have all these grout joints you can use to attach soap dishes, corner shelves, seats. The beauty of it is no drilling, no penetration of water. If your tile is straight, the soap dish is going to be straight.
Join Bruce Vanderlinde in Tile Talk every Saturday morning at 10:30 a.m. on News Radio 1070 WINA.
And welcome back to the Snow Nose Gardening Show. We've got about 10 minutes left, so if you have a question that you'd like to ask, our number is 977-1070. Get you in. We always have people that something strikes them right at the very last minute, and we don't have a chance to get you on. So if you've got a question, you don't have a whole lot of time left, so give us a call at 977-1070, and we'll get you right on. And look at that. Phone rings. We'll be with you in just a half a second. But, our number is 977-1070 if you have a question. And we'll go ahead and get you right on. Good morning. You're on the Snow Nose Gardening Show.
Hi. I have a question. I have a problem in my garden, and no one can give me any ideas what's wrong. It's just not vigorous, and I've done everything I know of. But I was questioning, what are nematodes? What are the symptoms if you have them, and how do you find out if you do have them?
Excellent, excellent question. Nematodes are a garden pest that you will never see.
Mm-hmm.
They are little microscopic worms that live in the soil, and they feed in and on the plant root system. And as they feed, they're like any kind of a plant parasite. They reduce the energy of the plant. They reduce its ability to absorb nutrient and water out of the soil by killing off some of the root system and by literally hijacking that nutrient and water stream from the plant for their own use. And they can do a tremendous amount of damage. The biggest plant that we see nematode damage on in this area is boxwoods. They can do a lot of damage to our boxwoods. A lot of people that have older plantings of boxwoods that are really in a severe decline, you start to see a lot of dead patches coming in them, and there's no, you can't see any evidence of fungus. You don't see any evidence of vole damage or anything like that eating the roots on them, or any other obvious symptoms or signs of where this injury and decline is coming from. When you have the soil looked at, it ends up being a nematode issue. And again, that's the most common plant that we see the problem on, but it can be an issue on a lot of other plants in the garden as well, even in the vegetable garden. And the only real way to be sure that you either have or do not have nematodes is to get what's called a nematode assay done. Mm-hmm. And that's where you take a sample of root and soil tissue. In other words, go right up at the base of a plant that is suffering for whatever reason, and take a sample of the soil that has a lot of the fibrous plant roots in it as well. And you take that to the Cooperative Extension office over on Fifth Street, and they can send it down to Virginia Tech, and they will literally look at it under a microscope, and they will identify what species of nematodes are present, if any, and in what kind of numbers those nematodes are present, and if those numbers are sufficient to be causing whatever plant damage you're seeing. And it's a good idea to include the information that you provide with the sample. You want to give a list of what kind of plants are growing in that area, how long they've been there. And, they'll ask you a series of other questions on the questionnaire that you fill out with the sample. And, within a couple of weeks, you'll get a result back that gives you an indication of what's happening down there in the soil. And that really is the only way to be sure whether or not you have nematodes. You can pull some of the roots up and look at them and get a somewhat of an indication of whether that may or may not be an issue, just because by looking at the roots and seeing if there's little nodules that have developed on there. But that's indicative of some types of nematodes and not so indicative of other types. And it doesn't give you a real clear indication of what's going on. It's just a, if you've got it to where it's that bad, that you're seeing a lot of those nodules on there, it's, you know, it's a, you know, it's a good indicator that, that you've got some issues going on, but usually it's pretty bad at that point. And there can be some that are down in there that, that don't form those nodules very well. So you can have a problem and not see it. So it's the best way to do it is to take a sample to extension, have them look at it down at Virginia Tech and yeah. they'll
so
be able to
they
tell
treated?
You. There's really not a good way to treat them, unfortunately.
That's the news I wanted.
Yeah. The only way to really control nematodes and eliminate them completely is to take out all of the plants, throw them all away, and to fumigate the soil with some really, really nasty stuff that you've got to have, you know, commercial people come in and tent the whole area and, you know, very noxious chemicals and all that kind of thing.
No, I'm talking about a vegetable garden.
Yeah, again, not something that you, you know, very, very cost prohibitive to do for a, you know, a small area like that and mm-hmm. and just very difficult anyhow.
Well, I'm just grasping at straws as to why my garden is just not doing better because it used to be amazing and over the last several years I can't get it to do anything and I've done soil tests. I have, every year I put some organic matter in. It's not a huge amount, but, you know, it's pretty high in organic matter. I've used the proper fertilizers, and it's just my plants are spindly. They just don't look, they're just not producing.
Right. And it's, you know, sounds like you're on the right track trying to do all the right things. So, you know, a nematode assay wouldn't be a bad idea to go ahead and get that done. You know, tomatoes can be susceptible to some of the root knot nematodes and things like that, and so, you know, some of the other plants as well. The other thing that you know, when was the last time you did a regular soil analysis?
A couple of years ago. I checked my pH last year, and everything seemed fine.
Okay. Yeah, it wouldn't be a bad idea to go ahead and you know, have you done lab tests or primarily the home tests?
No, I sent them off a couple of years ago, and I was actually on the high side of all of the nutrients and elements in the soil, magnesium, potassium, phosphorus, all of that.
Okay.
So because I was high, I held off on fertilizing much because I didn't want to overdo.
Right.
But now I know last year was an unusual year, but my tomatoes, even with watering some, they looked like a Charlie Brown Christmas tree. They never grew. They never developed leaves, really. They never grew in height. They never bloomed. Green beans, kind of the same thing. I'll have a squash plant, say a zucchini. It'll get up to about 8-10 inches, and it will not grow anymore.
And it just stops.
It just stops.
Yeah.
For months, I water. I've done everything, and they just literally stunted nothing.
Mm. And they're still getting plenty of sun and everything. One of the reason I ask that is where I have my vegetable garden at my house, the trees have grown up and have really shaded it out. Oh, there. How's that?
Oh, better.
Yeah, the reason I ask that is, you know, my
tree
garden
canopy.
Yeah, there's so much tree canopy there. It's kind of hard to get enough sun to them anymore. But
I still get probably a good solid five hours.
Okay, yeah, that should be plenty of sun.
I know.
Yeah, what I would just, you know, go ahead and it's definitely worth doing the nematode assay. I would also go ahead and send off another nutrient mm-hmm. sample, get that analyzed and. Have you been doing any fertilizing at all? Have you held off completely?
No, I do some.
Okay.
And I'll use, you know, garden tone. And
okay. It may be, particularly if the primary nutrients that or, you know, fertilizers that you've been using are the, you know, kind of the organic ones, it may just be that you're a little bit shy on nitrogen.
I have been low on nitrogen.
Okay, and that'll stunt plants like none other.
Now I've added. I wanted to go a little bit more natural, and I used dried blood.
Okay.
And I have amended with some high nitrogen.
Okay. Yeah. Keep. You know, once you get the soil test results back, you'll have a good foundation to go with this year. Maybe bring them in to the garden center, and we'll take a look at them and see what we can do to get you set up with some stuff that'll help to augment it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate you calling.
Sure.
Bye. That about wraps us up for this week. We've got a lot of stuff going on. Come see us out at the Garden Center. We've got lots of stuff for Valentine's Day, and we'll see you right back here next week.